Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Hi, this is Alan Chartok, and this is the Capital Connection today with one of the most important people in our orbit, a guy named Blair Horner, who's the head of the New York Public Interest Research Group, and who is on the front page of virtually every newspaper to the point where I am insanely jealous of his presence everywhere. Welcome to the Capital Connection, Blair.
Thanks for having me. If only it were true.
Well, it is true, and you are immensely respected. Well, the big news of the week happens to be the trial of Joe Percoco and some colleagues. Tell us about it.
Well, it's actually a sort of a complicated story, but I'll boil it down to its essential elements. A former top aide to Governor Cuomo, a guy named Joseph Percoco, longtime aide, a close associate, described by the governor in his father's eulogy as a brother.
The third brother, as I remember.
That's right. Who may have been loved the most.
Who was loved the most.
Right, yes. Right, in the eulogy, which was a very touching moment. Nevertheless, he's been indicted and he's in court this week for corruption, for using his public office for personal gain. The charges are part of a more complicated story about alleged corruption in various economic development programs, the Buffalo Billion, the Syracuse Development, Mid-Hudson Valley Development Projects. And so this person, Joe Percoco, has been indicted, and that court case started this week. It related to that, of course, are the individuals who were bribing him or allegedly bribing him, and specifically a developer in Syracuse and in the Mid-Hudson Valley are also on trial for their bribes to Percoco, allegedly. The U.S. attorney made a strong opening statement. The defense is fighting back. We'll see what happens. He's presumed innocent, of course.
He's presumed innocent, as everybody who is on trial is. Now, Joe Percoco, of course, has been regarded by many as the alter ego, as you're suggesting, of the governor. And it has been said again and again that when Joe Percoco calls you on the phone, the governor is calling you on the phone.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I mean, he was with the former governor, the father, Mario Cuomo. That's where he first cut his teeth in politics. He's been physically as close to Governor Andrew Cuomo as one can be in the failed 2002 gubernatorial bid. He was his top aide. He stayed with him even after that happened. He was very close in the attorney general's office. He was a top aide there and a top aide in the governor's office. And so, you know, you can't really find someone, certainly in the public domain, as close to the governor as Joe Percoco.
Now, into all of this comes another character, Todd Howe.
Right.
Who's he?
Well, Howe is another associate of the governor's and, interestingly enough, brought Percoco into Governor Mario Cuomo's offices when Todd Howe worked there, too. He's a former lobbyist. He seems to be the connective tissue in all of the schemes, in the Buffalo Billion scheme, in the Syracuse scheme, and in the Mid-Hudson Valley gas-fired plant scheme. He's sort of the character that ties it all together. He's pled guilty and is cooperating with federal prosecutors. And so the case in many ways is largely going to hinge on the veracity of what Howe says. Does the jury believe him? And the prosecutors have, you know, truckloads of evidence and emails and stuff that they're going to provide to buttress Howe's veracity as a testimonial. But he's the key guy. He's the go-between between the developers in all of these various cases. The campaign committee, because all of these developers were forking over big bucks to the governor for his campaign reelection in 2014, and then the alleged bribes that were occurring at the same time to both Howe and to Percoco.
So what does the word Z mean, and how does that figure in all
this?
Yeah,
I mean, it's sort of hilarious. Elements of the emails that have been disclosed is that they apparently the communications between Percoco and Howe via email relied on language used in The Sopranos. And so ZD was the word.
The code word for
money, right? And so, sort of an interesting little twist on the whole thing and added a little flavor, excuse the pun, to the otherwise dry email exchanges.
So how is the payoff allegedly done here? We hear about a wife and that the wife was put on payrolls for a lot of money.
The prosecutor's case basically is built on the notion that Prococo went deeply into debt to buy a big shot house in the Hudson Valley from Staten Island. He was in way over his head financially. He couldn't make his bills. And so part of the deal was his greed to deal with that led to him getting personal bribes, allegedly, from the Syracuse developer totaling around $35,000, I believe. And then his wife getting what was described by prosecutors as a low-show job, which I assume means that she didn't have to show up much, but that she didn't. It wasn't a no-show job. And that she was she had left her teaching position in New York City when they moved up into Westchester, Putnam area, and that she was getting paid big bucks by this natural gas power plant developer in the Hudson Valley. So that's where she sort of plays into this. She's not been charged with any crime. It's really all been about that this was all about in helping Prococo's finances, and then Prococo would weigh in different circumstances for each of these projects.
Now, Blair Horner of NYPERG, while all of this is going on, over the years, we've been hearing for the Supreme Court of the United States, which keeps telling us that bribery is tough to prove.
That's right. That's right. I mean, we'll see what happens here. I mean, both the former New York State's former Speaker of the Assembly and the former Senate Majority Leader are facing retrial this spring because their cases were vacated due to changes by the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court basically has said that the U.S. attorneys across the country have been interpreting the federal bribery statute in too broad of a way. And they keep trimming back how you can interpret bribery. And the most recent case was a case in Virginia where the governor there was showered with gifts from
McDonald case.
Yes, that's right. Governor McDonald was showered with gifts, he and his wife, in order for an individual there to get favors from the government. And the U.S. Supreme Court found that merely accepting gifts and setting up meetings doesn't mean that you are actually making an official act. And they drew the line there. In the Silver and Skelos cases, since the judge relied on the previous interpretation of this law when she instructed the jury in those cases were vacated because the description of the law was too broad. So this is very complicated. I know that your listeners, we're going to have like a legal pad of arrows and boxes to try to keep track of all this. But one of the issues that may ultimately come up in this case is how do you define Prococo's role as a public official? Part of the time that a lot of these things were going down, he's running the governor's campaign reelection committee, and so technically is not on government payroll. Does that mean he's off the hook? And so that will be one of the issues that the defense will use to argue that Prococo's innocent.
So far, you've done brilliantly in sorting all of this out for us.
I hope.
But how does this trial on Prococo differ from the McDonald decision? I mean, people get jobs all the time, low-show jobs, slow-show jobs. How do you prove the intent of having given the wife the job in order to get a payoff?
That's a good question, and that the defense is going to hammer away on this because I assume Prococo is not technically the person who approves the permitting for the gas plant in the Hudson Valley or helps with a labor problem for the developer in Syracuse. I mean, technically, is he the guy? But as you mentioned earlier, when he picks up the phone and somebody answers it, they know it's the governor calling, not just some guy. It's not some guy named Alan Shartok on the phone. It's someone named Joseph Prococo, very close to the governor. I mean, they'll have to make that case. This is where Howe becomes so important because the email correspondence between Howe and Prococo makes the argument that this was a scheme, at least allegedly, according to the prosecutors, that this is a scheme to raise money for them to enrich themselves and, by the way, to shake down people for campaign contributions. So again, Howe becomes a really central figure.
Absolutely.
In the prosecution's case. And if the jurors don't believe him, then, maybe the case falls apart. And you saw that in the opening arguments on Monday, where the defense went right at Howe, making the argument that he is a person that is not to be believed, that he made this whole thing up to save his own skin. He just fingered Prococo, even though Prococo is just sort of, an innocent bystander that may have made some judgmental mistakes, but they do not rise to the level of illegality and crime.
Now, I know when they were doing the voir dire, the choosing of the jury, they asked at least one of the jurors, I think it was a her, what she thought of politicians, and she basically said they're all crooks.
Yeah, you know, by the way, this is sort of a maddening aspect of this from sort of my perspective. I mean, like, we're interested in this case. Of course, we're interested in it because I actually know some of these people, and I'm sort of shocked by the whole thing. But it's also there are policy implications, right? So when you set up a system, which the governor has done, where you're trimming back independent oversight of the government contracting process, you're empowering a trusted aide to do, largely, you trust that he's going to do the right thing, and then he does the wrong thing, and the normal checks aren't in place. There are policy implications for how you should create a better system. And so I'm interested in all that. But when the public sounds so cynical that they just don't believe anything can be done to make a corrupt system not corrupt, it actually plays into the hands of the status quo political elite who argue cynically all the time the public doesn't care, which translates into the public is so cynical they don't believe anything can be done. And, you know, given some of the ethics reforms that have passed in recent years, you know, there's some, you know, it's like a legitimate critique of the reform efforts. Anyhow, so that doesn't mean you don't try, though. Democracy is a work in progress. It'll never be perfect. We have to keep trying to make it better.
We are talking to the, and I mean it, the great Blair Horner, who is the number one go-to person in and around things Albany to tell us what's going on. Now, one thing we have to make clear is that when Preet Bharara, who brought these original charges, got up to announce the indictments, he made it clear that Andrew Cuomo was not one of those people whose hands were dirty in all of this. However, let me just give my own little editorial here, and that is, hey, you were running the government. These were your closest friends, and why aren't you responsible for what they were doing?
Yeah, Bharara was actually very careful about what he said, and when asked about this, he said there was nothing in the charges that implicated the governor. He also said that he hoped that this case would go to trial, because he wanted the public to see these, as he, more or less as he was describing it, the way government functions and the sort of the seamy aspects of it. So I think he was going to put Albany on trial through this case. And that clearly has implications for the governor, because not in a criminal sense, but in the sense that he's the chief guy, right? He runs the state.
And he runs his closest friends who have been his guys all along. So, Blair Horner, let me ask you this. There's a lot of talk that, and many of us, including me, believe Andrew Cuomo wants to be president of the United States, something that was denied to his father. And yet, a lot of people are standing around saying he can't be president because of this trial. What do you think?
Well, I think it depends on what happens. Right. If Prococo's found innocent and the Howe thing completely collapses, then it's just a footnote in Cuomo's career. I mean, by the way, there's another case heading down the pike on this, too, dealing with the state's Nano Center and the former head of that, Elian Carlieros. So there's more to the story. It doesn't end with Prococo. But if Prococo gets convicted, then it's a problem. And there are independent National Watchdogs is a center at Columbia Law School whose head of it has described New York as one of, if not the most corrupt state governments in the country. Then it's tough to run for president if that's the thing that people hang around your neck. So I think the governor has to deal with this. I mean, he can't keep doing these half measures and arguing that more transparency solves the problem. Clearly doesn't. And much, much more has to be done. So, you know, again, 2018 matters more to 2020 than anything else. The governor wins in a landslide, and this case
sort of re-election effort.
And his re-election effort, and this case sort of slides back into the background, then it probably wouldn't have much of an impact on whether or not the governor wanted to run for president. If it blows up and he doesn't do anything about it, then he's going to have to deal with the charge that his state is known for government corruption. And, you know, the only way you deal with that is with policy solutions, not by just walking away from it.
Well, it's the only way you might deal with it. I'm not so sure it's the only way he's going to deal with it. Look, this governor has plenty to answer for. For example, we do know that the Republicans have been kept in power in the Senate, at least I know, in large part because of either action or inaction on the governor's part. There are a lot of people who think that this governor wants the Republicans to continue to control the Senate. Meanwhile, he wants to run for president of the United States, and there are going to be a lot of Democrats who are aware of this fact.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll see. I mean, if there really is a blue tide rolling through in 2018, it may not even matter by the time 2019 runs around. I mean, in terms of a national perspective, what's going to matter to Democrats, again, what do I know? I'm not a Democrat, but I would assume would be whether or not both houses were controlled by Democrats when he's running and not what happened in the prior 8 years. So if that's the case, then we'll see what happens. I mean, the elections in the fall are going to determine all that stuff, and how he behaves in the election may matter to Democrats a lot. But in terms of creating a public persona of who you are, because you have to introduce yourself to the American people if you're going to run for president, this problem of corruption in New York is not one that's easily hidden away. It's not like the New York Times is going to all of a sudden forget that this was happening. And I think the governor really does have to deal with this. And he doesn't like to revisit his issues. This is one, I think, a flaw in his in the way he administers his operation. Once he does something, it's done, right? He checks off the box, moves on to the next thing. He likes to move fast. He likes to move aggressively. He likes to get big ticket items done. He's done ethics. He doesn't want to revisit it. And so finding how you thread that needle where he can go back and revisit these problems in a way that doesn't admit that previous efforts failed, I think it's going to be the trick for guys like me. But we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, again, ultimately what matters is what happens in the case. Supposedly it'll be over in a month or so, and we'll know, you know, going into the spring whether or not this is a big or small problem for the governor.
Now, Blair Horner, one of the most interesting things about this whole mess is this guy Calieros. I remember when Elaine Calieros, who ran the nanotech thing out of New York and who was the golden boy, if there ever was one, nobody could even lift an eyebrow about this guy. And while I had my concerns, and I used to raise them with people and say, leave him alone, he's too powerful, how the mighty have fallen.
Yeah, you know, Calieros goes back to the Pataki years, and so he's been viewed, maybe rightly, I assume, as tremendously successful, and so why fix something that ain't broke, right? And there's aspects to this, all of this scandal, I don't quite understand. When I was reading the indictment against Calieros, the charges against Calieros, they mention in there, it's sort of buried in there, that he hires Todd Howe because he's concerned about his position as the head of the Nano Center.
Now, Todd Howe is the guy who was blowing the whistle on Joe Percoco.
Now, yes. But how did he know that? How did he know that Todd Howe was the guy to hire? How did the folks in Syracuse know that Todd Howe was the guy to hire? I mean, it's like, how did that happen? He just walked in one day and said, you should hire me? Someone must have validated his claim that if you hire Todd Howe, you had access to the inner circle of the Cuomo administration. So, I mean, there's a part of this that I don't quite understand. So why would Calieros think he needed that kind of protection, quote unquote, anyway?
Unless he was told he needed it.
Or whatever, right? And at the same time, Howe is representing companies that are trying to get business from the Nanos, and no alarm bell goes off. So clearly there's some aspect to this that will come out, I presume, in the court case, one of the court cases, that may answer those questions. Todd Howe is really sort of the central figure in all this, and how does he end up where he is as the central figure unless there's something going on, either wink and a nod or explicit, that he's the guy you deal with?
I want to spend a few more minutes with you, Blair, about some of the other things that, you know, you've been observing. One of them is this sort of senseless case of this, what seems like hatred between Mayor de Blasio in New York and Governor Cuomo in Albany. Both of these guys appear to want to be president of the United States, and they appear from time to time to be trying to knock each other's blocks off. Can't they get over this? Because it's killing them both.
Well, I mean, you know, the historical, as you know, tension that exists between the mayor of the city of New York and the governor of the state of New York goes back since the dinosaurs.
Rocky and Lindsay.
That's right. And so it's one of these things. So there's an institutional tension to begin with. And, you know, I mean, there's been lots of stories written about this. You know, I haven't really explored it much as to why it goes to sort of DEFCON 5 sort of level in this case. I mean, they know each other prior to their current positions, so some of this is clearly personal. A lot of miscalculations, the institutional pressure that occurs. But I think, though, the governor is the guy with the power. He has the upper hand in all this. And you see it in this year's budget. There's a lot of proposals in his state budget that either offload state costs onto the city or trims back the power of the city to do things. And so I think the governor may emerge out of this institutionally even stronger than they were before for the next governor and the next mayor.
Now, Blair Hornier, one of the things that we're watching right now is the Democrats, the regular Democrats, not the foo-foo Democrats who have tried to split off from the regular Democrats and make peace with the Republicans, are offering ways to increase the voter turnout in New York. Of course, the Republicans in the state Senate aren't going to let that happen, are they?
No, I mean, there's no evidence that they will. The foo-foo Democrats, I've never heard that called before. Is that a political science term,
yeah,
Alan? I never heard that one.
Yeah,
I must have missed that class.
Right.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a blue state. Democrats view, seemingly, that they would like to have make it easier for people to vote. Republicans are, you know, in a situation. I mean, if you look at the trends over time, the increase in Democrats, you know, is significant over time. The increase in independents is significant over time. And then the number of Republicans in the state has been stagnant now for years. And part of that is the branding problems in terms of how people in New York view the Republican Party. I assume it's worse with President Trump, who's extremely unpopular in New York State. So now, should you put partisan interests ahead of the public interest? No is the answer. But sometimes I'm not 100% sure. Democrats get elected because the current voters vote. Then you bring new voters into the system. There's a little bit of a political peril for them, too.
This is so interesting. So is there a sense that the break-off Democrats are ever going to get back?
Are those the foo-foo ones?
The foo-foo ones.
All right, I got it.
Are ever going to get back together with the regular Democrats?
Well, don't forget, I mean, there's 31 Republicans, 31 mainline and foo-foo Democrats, as you call
them. Altogether,
yeah. And then there's one, Simca Felder.
Yeah.
He's 32.
Yeah.
And so at the moment, he's the 32nd vote for whoever puts their coalition together.
But
so,
he's been voting with the Republicans.
He's conferences with them.
Yeah.
So that's the way he ran on the Republican line in the last election, as well as the Democratic line and the conservative line. So he's really the kingmaker here. And so what the IDC does obviously matters
the
to the Republicans,
yeah,
the foo-foos, because they create a cushion for the majority. But it's Simca Felder that matters. Now, what happens in November is going to matter the most.
Yeah. Very quickly, Andrew Cuomo has said he wants to kick out a lot of the Republicans who are congresspeople, John Faso, Elise Stefanik, and three or four others. What are his chances of doing that?
Well, you know, if the tidal wave looks like it looks today in January, I think that strengthens his hand. And from a national perspective, again, we were talking before about the state Senate. I think national Republicans are going to look much more closely at what happens with the House races than they are with the state Senate.
Well, that's the Capitol Connection for this week. It's Blair Hornier. If you ever want to see Blair Hornier, look on the front page of the New York Times. There he'll be. In any case, Blair, we so appreciate your being with us, as always, to sort of explain the inner, if smelly, workings of the New York State government.
Thank you.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.